Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I'm glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope that something in the next hour lights you up and helps you move forward. Now, if it sounds a little bit different today, it may be because if you hear birdsong, if you hear the whoosh of traffic, if you hear the wind, it may be because I am in my secret cottage in San Francisco. I'm usually sitting right there in the Empower Radio studios next to Nate, but I am in San Francisco. For the next couple weeks, I'll be here and in Los Angeles teaching and working with clients. And San Francisco is my home base, is the place where my heart beats truer, the place where I feel most aligned with my own journey. Have you got a place like that? A place that is your spiritual home, a place where you feel most in tune, wherever that is, and even if you can't be there right now, or even if you haven't been to that place in a long time, it's important to have that reference point, that center, to use in your own spiritual practice so that you can go there mentally, go there intuitively, go there spiritually, and sit in that place of center. So that's where I'm speaking to you from today, from my center. Now, the tarot has fascinated us for centuries. It's been used as a card game, an oracle, maybe a coded tool to reveal hidden secrets. Its appeal and its mystery crosses all boundaries of time and class and culture. My guest on today's show is Benabel Wen. She is here to guide us as we dive into the mystery of the tarot and to help us learn how we can use it to hone our intuition and our decision-making. Are you ready to meet her? Benabel Wen is a long-term practitioner of tarot and a certified master by way of the Tarot Certification Board of America. She's also a California and New York licensed attorney and works as a corporate legal counsel. Now, in addition to tarot, Wen is a feng shui consultant, I Ching practitioner, numerologist, and astrology enthusiast. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband, oh, and their beloved cat. Hooray for the beloved cat. You can find out more about Benabel and her work at BenabelWen.com. Benabel, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you so much, Karen. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh, I'm glad you're here. Can you just tell me about the beloved cat?
Well, I adopted him, or he adopted me, when I was still in law school, and I don't know, it's been love ever since. He's a short hair, American short hair, ginger and white, and his name is Prince Marshall Rimbaud the Great.
Oh, that's a very expansive name. That name conveys power and majesty.
Yes.
Now, how did you get so fascinated, so pulled into the tarot?
Well, I think ever since a young age, I've always been interested in the metaphysical and just trying to understand this aspect of unseen energy that's concomitant with the physical energies. And so, you know, whatever that came into my, you know, whatever I encountered, I'd be really interested in. But then when I got into tarot, I don't know, something just really clicked. And the more I practiced and studied it, the more I saw how it connected very integrally with many other different practices like astrology and numerology and how it tapped into the four cardinal elements. And then, you know, it was also very rich in terms of, I mean, it's modern history, but there's still definitely a history there that I enjoyed reading up on. And so I guess tarot really played into, you know, my left brain sensibilities and also my right brain sensibilities.
I think a lot of us flirt with tarot a little bit, but its appeal has lasted now down through the centuries. One of the most interesting things, Benabel's new book is Holistic Tarot. And one of the most interesting things I find in this book is there's a big section on the history of tarot and what it has, how it developed and what it's meant to people down the centuries. Can you say a little bit about what tarot is and how it developed?
Well, it depends on where in history you want to start. I know the Western historic perspective would start probably circa 1400s in Italy. But it didn't just start there organically. I mean, it didn't just sprout there. The concept came from somewhere. And so my theory, and based on some of the scholars I've been reading, the playing cards or a form of playing cards that we call mahjong came from China. And it has this sort of very closely resembles the structure of tarot, where you have a smaller subdivision of major arcana, and then you have which represent mahjong represent virtues and the dragons and things like that. And then you have the pips, where you have the numbers. Although in the Chinese version, it's 1 through 9. And then if you follow the history, there was the Silk Road at the time. So then you see this version of cards crop up in, I believe it was the Mamluk Empire around Persia. And that's a lot of historians also say that tarot comes from the Mamluk cards. And then it eventually made its way into Western society and became the tarot that we see today. And I think one of the earliest ones was the Visconti Sforza. So I found that history very interesting. I don't know if everybody would agree that there is this legacy in East Asia, but for me, of course, I would want to believe that since I come from an Asian heritage. So I find at the very least, if there's no chronological association, the synchronistic association is very interesting because you also see in, for example, ancient Korea using a form of cartomancy that's very similar to the suits of tarot.
And so, is it a game?
Yes.
Is it an oracle? There's a whole tradition here that I was unaware of. I really don't know anything about tarot. So your book was a fascinating window for me.
Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. And guys listening, this book is enormous, okay? This is a book you want to get and make notes in. This is what, like 800 pages, yeah, right? Full of history and case studies and a guide to interpreting the cards and notes on Benabel's reading techniques and how you can get started. Fascinating stuff. But especially in the history part that we're talking about right now, I was very interested to see how there's also a tradition that says that the tarot holds kind of coded arcane knowledge to be interpreted by the people who know the secret. That's very interesting.
That would be the Waite-Smith deck, the more 1909. Now we're getting a little bit more into modern history, where when the Golden Dawn and the Theosophical Society, Madame Blavatsky, when there was this whole movement in the late, I think would that be late 19th century, that really got into the occult. And they gravitated toward the tarot, which at the time Taroki was a game, and found that the signs and symbols there could be used or at least could correspond with many different theosophical ideas. And then they used tarot as an occult tool or for divination. And then some believe, and I believe at the time, this is where scholars will disagree with each other. Some believe that the whole concept of the book Thoth heritage, where it came from Egypt, is just a theory. You know, it was just a hypothesis that came up during the 18th and 19th century to give, you know, tarot a little bit more of an esoteric appeal. And then others say, well, no, that is the true heritage of tarot. So it depends on who you talk to. I don't think there's enough proof right now that it came from Egypt, but I could be, you know, I can stand corrected. And so at that time, that's when it really became a tool for divination. And similarly, they say that with the mahjong, which I believe is the predecessor, you have a game that was played, a card game of sorts, but then they say that the concubines of the emperor would use the mahjong tiles for divination and fortune telling. So there's always been this sort of this underlying current of fortune telling history that seems to be woven into the history of tarot.
That I have heard an idea expressed that tarot and other, what I'm going to call divination tools, and we can talk about divination versus fortune telling versus all that stuff. That's a fascinating part of the book, and I want to get into that. But I've heard it expressed that tarot and other divination tools are dangerous, are a little bit on the dark side, that when you are using them, you're messing with something that maybe you don't understand, that it can go a little too deep. And it feels to me from reading your work that you see it more as a kind of a neutral tool into which we can kind of dive in and pull out information about ourselves.
Yeah, I do see it as any object. I don't think objects can take on a good or evil characteristic. Humans are most definitely capable of good and evil. And so when we take an object into our hands and we infuse it with our intention, then that's when things become more subjective. As a tool itself, tarot doesn't have the capability of being a tool of the devil or a tool of the god, in my opinion. I believe that if you go into tarot wanting to use it to conjure or work in different metaphysical planes, then that's something that is viable. But if you're using it just to access different parts of your own mind as a psychological tool, then that's definitely something that I found to be an incredibly effective use of tarot.
And tell me about your use of the term holistic tarot. What does that mean?
Well, holistic tarot I see as drawing from many different studies and putting it into the tarot. So for example, my book is based on the Rider-Waite-Smith tarot deck. There's many different decks available out there. And the Rider-Waite-Smith version is the one where in the tips, the 2 through 10s, there's images. There's a narrative told in each card. And so some people are going to read just based on the images on the cards, or in the other versions where there's no images, they scry into the cards. So there's different methods like that, but they may not necessarily find it pertinent to bring in, for example, astrological correspondences or numerology and things like that. So my concept of holistic is to really bring in many different forms of study and sort of reconcile it into the images of tarot so that it's really, connected to the idea of as above, so below. And it reflects my theory on how the world works, that we're all connected.
When you are sitting with the cards, and let's start with saying that you're going to be reading for yourself, as you spread those out, you have said that tarot is a mirror. It reflects back who you are. And the reason I'm saying that is I'm tying into what you said about as above, so below. That mirror can show us not just what may happen, but also who we are, what's going on inside us at the moment, right?
Right.
Right. So is part of holistic tarot, is part of bringing a bigger sensibility to our use of that, also have a psychological connection then in terms of our self-knowledge?
It's kind of like, when you're not looking at a mirror, for example, just in how you look, your face, you kind of have an idea in your head, right, what you look like. But when you put yourself in front of an actual physical mirror and you see your eyes and your nose and you see what's going on your face, a clearer picture is presented, and you can, you see the parts that you really like about how you look, but you also see your flaws, and how you want to correct those flaws. And in the same way, that's what I feel tarot does for me. Without the tool, I think I have a general sense of who I am, right? But then when I'm confronted with it in the cards, for some reason, it's, my flaws and also my strengths are just more clearly presented to me. So I have no choice but to confront them and deal with, for example, my flaws and how I want to reconcile those flaws.
Because we all have free will. We are all making the choices that determine our path.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I do believe there's predispositions. So when we're born, some people are born more athletic. Some people are born more intuitive. Some people are born, they all have different strengths, more artistic, etc. However, we're all at some level intuitive, artistic, and athletic, correct? But then, I'm not going to be able to run a marathon, and other people are going to have a lot stronger psychic connections than I will. So it's all about just the different levels. That's predisposition. I agree that there is definitely that. However, that's as far as I believe there is a predetermination. What we do with what we're born with is a completely different story.
Well, and you talk about your belief that the tarot is not meant to be used for what you call fortune telling. Mm-hmm. And so are we getting, if there's predisposition, but maybe not predetermination, maybe not fate, what would it mean to use the tarot for fortune telling? And why is that not okay?
I think I may need to backpedal and start with some definitions. You know, for me, when I think of the word fortune telling, I always think of it denoting an absolute future. So, you know, for me, fortune telling seems to emphasize fate over free will. I do distinguish it from divination. I know some practitioners will make the distinction between fortune telling and divination. Others, for example, Waite in some of his texts sort of, you know, could jobble the two together. But I see divination as distinct because divination is about using tarot like a lantern, where the lantern can shine a light on the surrounding landscape of a person. And now that I can see a clearer picture of where I am and my context and where I have been, I can get a sense of, you know, where I'm headed or where I want to go. So that's what divination is to me. Now, in fortune telling, I see that as not having a lantern. It's sort of more one way where the fortune teller is dictating a path to the client. And I think that may come from sort of my more East Asian roots, where a lot of times the way fortune telling is practiced is that it's given in absolutes. This will happen. You are like this. You will not be able to prevent that from happening. And so that's what I tend to be against, and that's what I tend to discourage people from using tarot for.
I so agree with you in my own practice, which I do not use tarot, but in my own practice as an intuitive, it's so important. I will have people who connect with me and say, okay, when will I get married? How many children will I have? What will their names be? Right. What's going to happen to me next? And the truth is that whether we are using, in my case, clairvoyance and clairaudience, or we're using the tarot, or we're using any of the other ways that we can connect into that kind of that great consciousness that connects us, all we can do really is shine that lantern. As you say, all we can do is illuminate the path, and the choices that the seeker, as you would say, makes are what determine the path. What I often say to people, Ben and Belle, is it's not what I say, it's what you do. I can run the energy forward and show you what'll happen if nothing changes. We can look at outcomes if you make different choices, but it's everything comes down to the choice of the seeker. That's part of why this can be a useful tool for getting insight, but not for telling you exactly what to do next. Go here, take the red car, right? Marry a man named Larry, right? That kind of, it's not for that.
Right. And also, as you mentioned about the clairvoyance, I think whether or not you can predict or see isn't even the issue. You know, even if you can, by saying it to the person, what's the use there, you know, for that person? I believe there's a concept of wisdom also attached to tarot practice, you know. Even if the tarot is capable of giving certain information, what's the usefulness in having that information, you know, available at this exact moment? So there's the wisdom component to divination as well.
Well, and if we use tarot as a tool for healing, at least as I believe, part of that healing is the seeker coming into the knowledge of his or her own power,
right,
to make change, right? Healing's always in agreement. And so the seeker must agree to, it's part of why I think you can't, at least as I understand it, can't do a tarot reading unless both people have agreed. I won't do an intuitive session unless we're in full agreement to have the session. Everybody's open, because that's part of the healing. That's part of the insight. The tool isn't magic. The reader isn't magic. Any quote magic, and I'm putting that in kind of ironic quotation marks, the magic is in the seeker, is in the questions, is in the story, is in that what that lantern reveals.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Where do I want to go with this? There is a way in which when sometimes people have their fortune told, and they maybe have that done in a tarot reading, and the tarot reader is focusing on some of the negative cards that come up, and a limited future is given to the seeker. This will happen. Beware of this, right? You can't escape. And that can be very, can be very limiting, can be very frightening for people who go for a reading thinking that there will be the authority, right? This is how it's going to be. I can't escape this. And so people are afraid. What would you say to help people maybe not be afraid to go and seek that guidance? Because it's not a scary thing.
Right. Tarot itself, see, tarot practice is very, it's varied. So one thing I would do is find out what the specific tarot practitioner's code of ethics is and what their philosophy and their approach to tarot is. If they are using it for predictive or fortune-telling purposes and that aligns with what you want, then there you go. But if that's something that may not appeal to you, then you're going to want to find a tarot practitioner who is using tarot in ways that align with your worldview. So that would be the first thing that I say. And secondly, if you do talk to somebody and, you know, if you happen to have a tarot reading where it does get predictive and you feel it's all doom and gloom, it becomes an exercise of willpower. You know, if you let that, the willpower of that reading and the energy of that reading overpower your personal will, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in many ways. But if your will can overpower the energy of that predictive reading, then you're still paving your own path and pioneering your own way toward the desired outcome. So if something like that happens, I would just sort of up the ante in terms of my own willpower and try to outtake that energy. Does that make any sense?
No, it does make sense. And okay. It's, you know, there's that old idea. I don't know if it has a name, but there's that old idea that once the cards are revealed, that makes the future, that if I never connected with you for a reading and you had never turned over those cards, things would be different, but that the act of me going and having those cards turned over, now it means that I have to marry a man named Larry and I will, I don't know, be hurt by a black horse and what, right? And that's a very, that takes out, that gives the power to the tool and not to the seeker, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I think the reason that theory came about is because of people's observations that that's what happened. And the reason that that may happen is all, again, in the seeker and in the subjective mind of the seeker. When you go in there and you let somebody else imprint your mind with a particular fate and you sort of become bogged down by the idea that this is going to manifest, you're it's not the cards, actually. It's you who has made it happen. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm saying to overpower that and say, well, I'm going to transcend whatever those cards say and move forward with my own agenda anyway. In that case, you're overpowering whatever was laid out in the cards.
Is it ever light, fun, freeing, these sessions? Because now all of a sudden I'm marrying the guy and the black horse and everything. But there's also a lightness to this, can be a lightness in these readings as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Again, it's a tool, and you use it in however method you want to use it. You know, just like, for example, a knife or alcohol. There are many, many different ways you can use it. Some, you know, veer toward abuse, and some is, you know, religious, right? And so I see tarot as the same way. A lot of times you can use it for very light fun, you know, take it out during a party, a cocktail party, and play around with it just for some very light, oh, this is going to happen tomorrow. That's going to happen. That's definitely what use for it, you know. For me, I see it more spiritual. So I don't really take out the cards for fun, in that light sense. But that's just my own relationship with the cards. So when I'm pulling out the tarot cards, I'm really seeking spiritual advice.
And I think the mindset that you bring to that consultation also then affects what you receive, right? So if I'm just going to grab a card on my way out the door, that might be one way of doing it. But if I'm going to sit down and now get centered and really pay attention, I'm going to have a very different result.
Yeah, absolutely. And my theory for that is it depends on what part of the mind you tap. You know, you can still work very effectively with tarot only within the consciousness, which is the part of your mind that you're fully aware of. Now, you can also tap into the subconscious, which is the repository of, you know, past memories and past emotions or things that you've repressed. Then there's the unconscious. I believe, the unconscious is where intuitive abilities come from. Some people are born with this ability to tap into that unconscious part pretty easily, you know, and others are not. So tarot helps those who may not be born with these gifts to tap into those unconscious parts of their minds. And when you use tarot in that sense, you do need to sort of approach it with a little bit more serious, trance-like state so that you can really focus on, you know, that kind of an exercise.
This is wonderful stuff. You are listening to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest is Benabel Wen. She is the author of the new book, Holistic Tarot, an integrative approach to using tarot for personal growth. You can find out more about Benabel and her work at BenabelWen.com. Let me spell that for you. That's BenabelWen.com. When we come back after this short break, I want to talk to Benabel about how we can choose a deck, get started, connect with the cards, and then get started with a very basic idea of using tarot to help feed our intuition, hone our intuition, give us personally some of that insight that we've been talking about. We'll be right back after this.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I want to change some things.
I want the moms where I live to have childcare they can trust.
I want to make sure my little brother and his friends have a safe place to play.
I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
Help more hardworking families learn how to budget and save.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
Want to make a difference? There are so many ways you can. Help create opportunities for everyone in your community.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life: education, income, and health.
I mean, I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalks.
Reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. For more, visit United Way at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio, empowerradio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest on today's show is Benabel Wen. She is the author of Holistic Tarot, an integrative approach to using tarot for personal growth. And you can find out more about Benabel and her work at BenabelWen.com. And of course, I welcome your feedback, your questions about today's show. Are you a tarot practitioner? Has listening to what Benabel said so far changed maybe the way that you relate to your own tarot practice or in the way that you seek seek reading, seek insight. I'd love to hear your feedback on the show. You can always find me at KarenHager.com. That's also a great place to take a look at my upcoming events in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Almost everything is booked full. I've got 2 spots left for the gallery reading on Saturday, February 28th. I'd love to see you there if that resonates. All that good stuff's at KarenHager.com. Now, Benabel, right before we went to the break, we were talking about how tarot helps us get beneath that layer of the conscious mind. And when we think about using the tarot to hone our intuition, to take us deeper into that river that we were talking about, that where the cards spread out and there you can see that path, what is the connection, do you feel, between our imagination and what the cards bring out in us, the associations they strike in us, and our intuition?
I see a lot of connection. The imagination is, it opens the path into that intuitive part of our mind. And so a lot of times creativity, imagination, and intuition all sort of merge and meld together. So a lot of times when you talk to people who are incredibly innovative, and I don't just mean in creative fields, even in the world of business or in the world of science, they always talk about how the most innovative aspects to their work is often coming from a place of creativity and imagination. And then it's something that just triggers almost unconsciously. They can't really explain how the connection was made. It's sort of, well, it's intuitive, you know? And so that's that part of the mind that just, you know, sort of without our triggering it, kind of spurts up into the surface of our consciousness and then becomes productive. And so tarot helps us, instead of waiting for it to rise to the surface, go in deep and retrieve it.
And there's that strong visual connection. When you look at the image, even on one card, one of the great things about your new book is that there's a detailed kind of description and analysis of every single card. Fascinating, especially for someone like me who has not really paid very much attention. There are layers and layers of meaning there. Mm-hmm. And that visually can spur our imagination, right?
Yeah, and so that's where I really believe there is an interconnection. I know there are several scholars and philosophers in the past who've talked about a collective unconsciousness where it's like the psychic unity of mankind, where we do inherit, as an individual, inherit certain information from our species that remain in the collective unconscious. And so the images on the card, the signs and symbols of the tarot, for some reason, and this is where you can speculate, but for some reason, it's able to tap into the pool of collective unconscious and retrieve information.
And the deck that you use in the book, the deck that is focused on in the book, is the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, and that's the one that I consider sort of the most traditional, I guess, in terms of our modern sensibility. Why did you choose that deck to focus on in the book?
The one that comes before the Rider-Waite-Smith in terms of chronology would be the Tarot de Marseille. And how you categorize, I mean, there's just so many decks and many different eras. So how you categorize is very different. For simplicity's sake, and assuming that somebody is coming in at a beginner level, I try to break it down to 3 basic systems based on the pictures rather than, for example, the English school or the French school, etc. So the Rider-Waite-Smith is sort of the center one in terms of chronology. The one before is the Tarot de Marseille, where the cards, for example, 2 through 10, you don't have a picture, you don't have stories. You just have the, you know, 2 batons or 2 swords, etc. So I feel that if somebody is coming in as a beginner and maybe doesn't intend to take tarot terribly seriously, the Tarot de Marseille may be very difficult for them to use because, like you said earlier, how there's that connection between the imagination and the intuition. The story cards really help us access the stepping stone of imagination into intuition. So that's why I like the Rider-Waite-Smith. And the Soth is the one that comes after that. I believe that if you're really into tarot and you use this book as a, you know, as a beginner level book, you're going to start looking elsewhere into the other books on the Soth and the Tarot de Marseille anyway. But if you're coming in as just a beginner or you only want to use it for practical purposes, then I think that the center one, the Rider-Waite-Smith, would be the best for that purpose.
And if someone is wanting to come in at a beginner level and they go and they find their deck and they're going to start with the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, how do they, you really spell out ways in which the practitioner can connect with the cards before they do any kind of reading for themselves or for someone else. Can you say a little bit about that connection and why that's important?
It's going to vary from person to person. Growing up, I was a violinist, and I was pretty serious about it, too. And so when you meet other people who are very serious about violin, interestingly enough, they can get very superstitious with their rituals, you know, before they go in for an audition or before they start a concert. There's very specific things that they do, or there's specific things that they put in their violin case. You know, it's very, very specific, or they have to wear something, a certain charm, or wear a certain. And then I hear that athletes have the same rituals, you know, and it's really not about the ritual, but it's about the mindset. And so if you're going to get ready for serious intuitive work, it really is about the mindset. And you'll want to find rituals that really help you become centered and grounded. And for me, a lot of times, crystals help me for some reason. You know, I like crystals and gemstones. They really put me in the right centered mindset. And so that's what I like to do. But, you know, there's many different methods that I spell out in the book that I hope people will find what resonates with them and work with that.
Is the idea of those methods a way of building a sacred connection between the practitioner and the deck that she or he has chosen? Is it the idea that when we honor something, when we give it a rightful place, we then it's more insightful for us?
I believe it's both. You know, it's not just about the sacred connection between a person and the deck. I mean, that's one way to see it on the surface level. It is that, because that's how you would focus. The way to focus is between you and the deck. But the real exercise going on is a connection between, I guess, you and your higher self, or you and your consciousness and your unconscious, depending on which vocabulary people like to use, or you and the divine, right?
Love it.
And so being able to get into a sacred mindset, which sometimes requires sacred space, is how you get into that mentality and how you establish that connection.
Mm. And that's why daily spiritual practice is so important. I'm a nut about daily spiritual practice, because that gives you the baseline for everything you do, whether it's tarot or washing the dishes or starting a new job or anything. Comes from that baseline.
Yeah, and so I have a whole chapter on meditation, grounding, and centering, because I feel like that is really important. And I also talk a bit about essential oils and the setting of a tarot reading. Also, just because I want to have that information available to people so they can see what works for them and really incorporate that into their ability to develop sacred space.
So let's say we're ready to start to get to know the deck a little bit. You have suggested that you make time at least once a day, right, to go through the deck and just have a look at the images, just to touch the cards, just to start to get familiar with the basic concepts that are associated with each card, right?
Right.
When we're doing that, are you suggesting that what we try to do is memorize the meanings? Or are you suggesting that we at that time, in this very first connection, are looking for something beyond, behind, more than just those meanings?
So now we get into pedagogical approaches, how you teach tarot, how you learn tarot. It depends on how you learn best. So certain people, for example, me, I do like to have a very traditional and strict way of learning something, and that's in any field. And so for me, a form of rote study, a form of memorization helps me get started. Just like, for example, in music, you learn the technical aspects of it and you master the technique first and you memorize the song. And then once it becomes muscle memory for you, then you get into the creativity and then you interpret the music, and that's where you get into the musicality. But without that baseline muscle memory, you're too focused on the technique. How can you ever get into the creative element of the interpretation? So for me, I like to have that technique down cold, so that when I'm doing a reading, I'm only focusing on the intuitive connection. I'm only focusing on the imagination, and I'm not sitting there trying to recall what a card means. You know, I feel like for me, that distracts me. So I do like to have a traditional rote memorization beginning. And then once I've established that as part of my muscle memory, I don't really need to work on the technique part anymore. I just focus on the imagination. That's how I work. Other people are not going to work very well under such a rigid structure. So then they're going to be more intuitive as a reader and just, you know, sort of play by ear, so to speak. You know, and when a card comes up, then you sort of get lost in the imagery and the signs and symbols and almost scry into the cards to find your meanings that way, where there isn't a traditional study before you start the reading process.
One of the things that made me laugh was you advocating that we begin to do our first readings maybe for our teddy bear. can you share that? Just really made me laugh. So can you share about that and why that's important?
Well, it's mostly probably just because I'm a dork and I didn't have friends. And so I didn't have friends to practice on. And so I was like, okay, well, I do have 50 teddy bears here. All right, let's get started. Line them up. You know? So that's, like if you want the truth. But I guess it's more just about being a responsible practitioner. You know, when you first start the tarot, it's understandable if particular cards that you don't understand yet can be a little bit intimidating. For example, the Death card or the Ten of Swords or the Tower card. And if you're not yourself familiar with those cards and you don't have a strong command and mastery over that card, if it comes up in a reading for somebody else and, you know, your eyes roll, you know, you kind of, you know, stop breathing for a second, your seeker is going to pick up on that. And now you've just freaked out the seeker, right? And so that's what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about your level of, or the seeker, the practitioner's level of mastery prior to doing a reading for somebody else. You want to be a real master at least understanding the nuances of the positive and negative aspects of every card before you do a reading for a live human being, because you don't want that accidental, you know, and then scare the other person, right? So.
Well, and that I've been working the way that I work for a long time now, and that there it is really important to have that flow so that no matter what comes up, I probably can't stop someone from being afraid of the Death card if they see it, right? But what maybe I could do is immediately note their fear and explain what that really means in a nice, smooth way, in a flowing way, so that it doesn't interrupt the energy of the reading.
Exactly.
And it also helps probably the seeker remember that they're in a safe place.
Exactly.
That this is what I would call sacred work. This is work with depth, with meaning that we're doing here. It's not about, oh, it's the Death card, everybody run.
Right, right. And so you need to be able to, and again, that's really the responsibility of the practitioner to keep the energy flow and to keep the sacredness or the warmth of the space. You know, that is your responsibility as a practitioner. It's not the seeker's responsibility. So you need to be able to learn how to, you know, have control over that sacred space while you're doing the reading before you do an actual reading for a person. So jokingly, I say practice for your teddy bear, you know. So you learn how to control and manage the space.
Can we be accurate when we read for ourselves? I'm asking that because I know how much I get in my own way.
I do give my analogy for how you read for yourself. You know, it's all about conflict of interest and being able to manage conflict of interest. You know, when you're reading for yourself, you can't help but want certain outcomes, right? And so if you let that become a block, then it's really hard to read for yourself. That's why a lot of practitioners will ask for other, you know, go to somebody else for a reading. But if you do want to read for yourself, and my book does advocate for that, it's all about being more objective. And the way to see that is how, for example, a businesswoman will operate a corporation that is just her. You know, you have to be able to keep separate accounts. You have to be able to keep everything separate between the business and the personal. And if that's something you're capable of doing, then reading for yourself is a very effective way of understanding yourself. But it has to be objective. In certain practices, people talk about shadow work. And shadow work is also about being very objective with yourself and your own personal motivations. If you can bring that kind of, you know, energy into reading for yourself, then it's a very effective tool.
I know that you advocate keeping a tarot journal, which is not just for personal readings, but also for work then with seekers, if you're going to connect in that way. Can you say a little bit about the value of keeping that journal and what we need to have in that, even as we're starting?
There's many different, there's so many different uses for it on a personal level. So on a personal level, it helps me track my progress and my own personal development as a reader. You know, in the beginning, you'll have certain cards and I'll interpret it a particular way. But then if I can go back later on in time and review that and see how actual events transpired or whether or not I was, you know, not quote unquote accurate, that will help me develop a stronger relationship with the signs and symbols of the cards. And that's how I begin to form my own approach to tarot. So that's very important. If you don't keep a journal, it's really hard to adopt to your own approach. You know, you end up only using other people and borrowing other people's meanings. By keeping a tarot journal, you're basically formulating your own set of card meanings. Now, from a professional perspective, a lot of times you will have repeat clients, and a client will come back to you, and you should be able to go back into past readings and get a sense of the, the linear trajectory that their life has taken from the past readings and their development there to the present reading that you're about to give. So that, for that reason, having a tarot journal is very important.
As you connect with people in your own practice, how would you say you prepare? What are some of your, are they rituals? What are some of your practices for getting ready to connect with a seeker before that person is ever even in front of you?
It's a day-to-day thing, you know, before there's even a discussion about a tarot reading or an actual client. It's about making sure I am able to always go into a particular sacred space when I need to go into that space. And so that may be, just quiet meditation on a routine basis. For some people, they like to go through periods of being vegetarian to what they call accumulate karmic merit, things like that. That really helps me get into the right space when I have to be, when there is a client and there is a reading that needs to be done. So that's sort of the preparation work that I'll do way before we even talk about clients. And then once somebody comes to me for a reading request, what I'll do is I need to make sure it's a day when there isn't a lot of stress going on that week. So if that week is particularly busy, I'll actually refuse readings. But that's also because I'm not a full-time tarot reader. So I think my approach would be very different if I was a full-time professional tarot reader. But because I do have a day job, then I'm going to wait only for a time when I'm fully clear in my mind. And that's when I'll do tarot readings.
And as you prepare, I know that you ask for certain information from the seeker. And can you share why that information is important? Birth date, for example, is one of those.
Yeah, I'll get the date of birth. That helps me. I like to use signifiers, or traditionally they're referred to as significators. And that card is the card in the deck that becomes representative of you and your personal energy. And for me, it anchors the cards and the compendium of tarot imagery around your personal energy. So I really work with that, and I like using astrological signs or the sun signs for that. Now, because my approach to tarot is to bring in other aspects, I'll sometimes get date of birth, time of birth, and location of birth to construct a natal chart. So, for example, if you're asking a question about love, then I'll construct a natal chart to get a sense of the predisposition for love in your natal chart and compare and contrast that to the nurture and the actual life trajectory you've taken that's going to be expressed in the tarot cards. And we do sort of a comparative analysis of the two. So that's the pre-information I'll get from some seekers to be able to do that comparative analysis.
If you pull that card that represents me, let's say you're going to read for me, and you pull the card that represents me, isn't that missing then from the rest of the reading? Does that mean it's not, then that one doesn't count, can't be a part of the reading that you do? Do you know what I'm saying? Then aren't you missing
totally.
One if
Absolutely.
You do that?
It becomes a difference in how you view the tarot. So, for example, in card counting, this is actually a traditional technique where you count cards, and then based on the zodiac and the elemental correspondences and the planetary correspondences. When you do card counting, some people are going to start with the significator as 1, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, then do the counting technique. And then others will skip the significator, and the first card to the right or to the left of the significator becomes 1, and then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Do you see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
The difference between the two is based on your worldview, I suppose, whether or not the ego and the self is part of the compendium that is being analyzed. And so for me, because this reading isn't just based on this, you know, vast universe, but it's based specifically on how this universe applies to your life. So then for me, the signifier is very important because, yes, it does take one card out of the deck, but that card is the ego. And so the ego becomes, so now we're doing an egocentric reading, you know, whether it's geocentric or, you know, whether we're putting the sun first or whether we're putting the earth first. In that sense, it's whether we're putting the universe as a macroscopic landscape or whether or not we're putting the self first and then seeing how the world fits around the self. So the way I like to read is to put the self first as an anchor and see how the world falls around the self.
Do you feel that from different techniques, all the different ways that tarot can be read, all the different interpretations of the cards, all the different mindsets of practitioners and seekers, if I were to have, let's say, 3 different sessions with 3 different practitioners, should I get roughly the same path shown to me? I think what I'm getting at is the truth in the cards? Is the truth in the interpretation? Is the truth in me?
What's interesting is if you get 3 different readings from 3 different tarot readers, the 3 tarot readers will use probably very different approaches to how they go about that divination, but the final message will pretty much be the same. And I've talked to many practitioners, and they all agree with this. It's this weird thing that no one really has a logical explanation for, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times you do have these people who are going to go see, you know, 3 psychics, 5 tarot readers, a rune reader, and 4 I Ching masks. You know what I'm saying? You know, you will have those people. And they'll always say to you, oh, well, my psychic told me this, and then the rune master told me that. And it's exactly the same thing that your cards are telling them.
Right.
So I think there's this sort of truth that's sort of just out there. You know, there's this truth in the metaphysical dimension around that person, and everybody is tapping into the same truth. Everyone's tapping into that same energy. They're just using different methodologies.
And when you get that validation, it may be time to stop asking for those answers and start acting on what you receive. That's what I say to my people who say,
yeah,
well, I called so-and-so and they said this and so and they said that, and now you say this. Well, yes, that means go, baby, go, right? Act on it, to make that choice, make the changes, move forward.
Yes.
Now I see that we're sneaking up to the end of our time. Can you let people know how they can get a hold of the book?
It's at, well, I believe in Canada, it's at Chapters Bookstore. In the United States, it's at Barnes & Noble. You can also buy it online at Amazon.com.
And there's a Kindle edition. Now, I've got mine on my Kindle, and I was skeptical because there's a lot of images in the book, and I thought, but it looks good on the Kindle, but I'm wishing I had a print copy right now because I'd like to write in it. And so I think my recommendation would be to listeners that they get a print copy because this is one you're going to want to make notes and you're going to want to fold down pages, right? I think you want the paper for this. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. It was admittedly, it was difficult for me also to work with the Kindle version. I really need the physical copy because this isn't a book you read cover to cover. I don't think you're going to read it cover to cover. It's like an encyclopedia of sorts. It's a reference book. So you're going to want to tag it up.
Wonderful. And don't be afraid to write in your books. It took me, I think I was in my 30s before I allowed myself to write in a book, but it's okay to write in your books. And this is one. Annabelle, what's next for you?
There's definitely a second book in the horizon. I haven't figured out exactly how that second book will manifest, but definitely I want to continue writing.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We just scratched the surface of what you have to offer in the book, and I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Karen. It was a huge pleasure of mine.
Oh, I'm so good. I'm so glad. Thank you. That was Bennebelle Wen. Her new book is Holistic Tarot, an integrative approach to using tarot for personal growth. You can find that book at Chapters in Canada at Barnes & Noble in the U.S., also available on Amazon.com. You can find out more about Bennebelle and her work at BennebelleWen.com. I'm going to go ahead and spell it for you. Ready? BennebelleWen.com. And of course, I welcome your feedback, your questions, your input about this show. Are you going to go out and buy a tarot deck? Because I think I might be about to go out and buy one. Let me know how you're doing. You can always get reach me through the website at KarenHager.com. And thank you for listening today. Together, we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.